Do you remember what it was like to be 15? I get a constant reminder of it every day because I have a 15-year-old daughter, Emily. But maybe it's been a while since you've talked with somebody or met with somebody who's that age. But I tell you what, our next guest does a great job of writing about what it was like to be 15 in Wisconsin in the early 1970s. Jim Guhl is our guest today. His last name is spelled G-U-H-L, but pronounced Guhl. Jim Guhl, with us from our studios in Eau Claire. He's a writer, visual artist, and we're going to talk with him about his first novel. It's called 11 Miles to Oshkosh. We're going to talk with him about writing the book, what his writing process was like, and of course, take your questions or comments. Kind of a coming-of-age book in many ways. Do you like coming-of-age stories? Which are your favorites? What would you like to know about writing a novel? What would you like to know about 11 Miles to Oshkosh, the title of his book? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Jim Guhl, welcome to the program. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me on the show.
I loved your book, and so did Jill Nadeau, my producer. We thought, oh my goodness me, I hope this book gets a lot of publicity because it deserves it.
Well, thank you. I can tell you I had a great time writing it. And I grew up in Neenah, which is where the bulk of the story takes place. And I was able to rely on memories of when I was that age and, in fact, attended Shattuck High School, which is the school that the book talks about. And the whole region of Neenah, Menasha, the Fox Valley up and down, Winnebago County. It's just been a joy for me to be able to put the effort into writing the book.
Yeah, well, you did a fine job with it. You know, I was thinking back. I've had written myself a book or two and have edited a book or two. And I remember the first one I did when I was done with it. It was a PhD dissertation, but it was a book, and it was about 300 pages or so. And I thought I was going to be really excited when I was finished with it, but I was a little depressed in a way about the whole process. This is the first day of the release of your book. How do you feel?
I am very excited about it. To tell you the truth, it's about my fifth or sixth try at writing a novel. And the first five tries, let's call it, were my education in this. I also have spent a lot of time, Larry, writing short stories. But this book feels good to me. I'm proud of it. I feel the voice in the book is interesting and fun, and I really hope that other people agree with that.
Well, I thought, you know, I have a 15-year-old daughter, so I know a little about 15-year-olds because she also has a lot of friends, boys and girls, and so I get to see how they react and talk. And so I thought you really caught the essence of how a 15-year-old might feel. And I particularly thought you did a wonderful job in the time setting that you had, because here we are back in the 70s. Things were different then.
Yeah, that's true. Even the words that were used by a 15-year-old were different then. The experience in school was different. One of the big things that was different was the amount of freedom a kid had. The cover of the book shows a twin typhoon bicycle.
Yeah.
And
Eisenhower.
Exactly. The main character's name is Del Finwick. His nickname is Minnow, in large part because of his small size for a 10th grader. But anyhow, a kid on a... And I know this firsthand because I grew up in Neenah with a twin typhoon bicycle. A kid had a lot more independent freedom in terms of roaming around town and even outside of town. The book also talks about his irascible grandfather, Grandpa Asa. And Asa is kind of an enabler also. To the point where he allows Dell access to his Chevy Apache pickup truck, which gives him even more freedom, even though he's not 16 yet. So I think that's one of the big things when you talk about early 1970s, is that it was a different life for a kid then, based on the fewer restraints.
And I think we should probably talk a little bit about the bones of the book, I guess you might say, because the book is really about Delmar trying to find who murdered his father.
Yeah, that's right. Chapter one is a very short chapter that describes the funeral of his father. And so that kind of sets things up. So we know that Dell has got challenges. His mother also, because of health conditions, struggles. And so the family is kind of in trouble. But you're right, the main theme is Dell, who struggles with being scared of a lot of things, lacking courage. It's the exploration of Dell finding that courage and doing something about the person who killed his father.
Yeah. Jill Nadeau, my producer, as she read it, she said, you know, she used the term kind of a coming-of-age novel. Do you agree with that description?
Yeah, I totally do, Larry. I think it's a coming-of-age story. It's a coming-of-age story with a mystery kind of embedded in it. A solving the crime kind of an aspect embedded inside of it. And if you take where Dell is at the beginning of the story, which is the beginning of his sophomore year in high school, and you take where he is at the end of the story, which is the beginning of summer after his sophomore year in high school, you can see the growth that has taken place in the kid. And that's really, in a nutshell, that's the main thing the story is about, is personal growth in a kid that I think, if people read the book, they're going to be able to root for as he makes his way from the start to the finish.
No, there's no doubt about that. And I think there's quite a bit of growth as well in at least one other character, I would say his mother.
Right. Dell's mother struggles with health problems through the book, but she... Are you talking about her attitude toward Opal Parsons, for example?
I was just kind of... Her overall outlook, I think that she felt... I felt like she had opened herself up a bit more and was getting more involved in everything from church to other kinds of activities.
And Dell kind of forces the issue on that. At one point in the book, To give you an idea of what we're talking about with Dell's mother, at the beginning, let's say third of the book, she has kind of confined herself to staying at home, sitting in front of the television set with a pack of cigarettes and a cup of coffee. And Dell kind of forces the issue on this, and he makes friends with a group of women called the Church Ladies, who come in and intervene to some extent. Dell's mother is also forced to deal with helping people, including his best friend Mark, who has his own troubles with an abusive father. She eventually goes so far as to get involved with Dell's effort to resolve the crime that caused the death of Dell's father.
Let's take a call here. Rosie and Ashland, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
You mentioned that there were fewer restraints on children back in the day. That's about the time I was raising three daughters, and I think there were more built-in family restraints, and so the community restraints were not as necessary.
Ah. You agree with that, Jim?
I think that's a good point. I just remember being turned loose and having the guidelines at home of get home for lunch, get home for supper, and there were consequences to be paid if you didn't do those things.
But in the middle of all that, you got to do kind of what you wanted.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I talk about a lot of places within the Neenah Menasha area, and as just as Dell and his friend Mark explore Lake Winnebago, explore Little Lake Butamore, the Lock and Dam, the Fox River that flows through Neenah. There's an island that makes the barrier between Neenah and Menasha, which is very interesting. It's kind of the oldest part of the city is the island in Neenah.
Yeah,
and there's Kimberly Point. There's marshes down toward the fresh air camp. There's marshes up toward Menasha. All of these areas are ripe for exploring, and parents back then kind of turned the keys over to the kids to do their own exploring within guidelines of don't go beyond here, be back by this time, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Give you an idea of how important the bicycle was to every single kid.
Oh, yeah.
Neenah Rec Swimming Pool. It's a huge, it's a big Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Oh, you know what?
It was in its day.
Hold on to that story, Jim, because we need to take a quick look at the news. We're going to take a quick break. Hold on to that story, and we'll get that story. And we'll take your calls as well at 800-642-1234. Jim Gould, author of 11 Miles to Oshkosh, our guest, will be back right after the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, having some fun talking to author Jim Gould. His latest or his new book is called 11 Miles to Oshkosh. And it's a wonderful book, I think. And Jill Nadeau, who's also read it, agrees with me. And it's fun talking with him about the book. He's a writer, visual artist in our Eau Claire studios today. So as we talk with him, the book, by the way, it's a coming-of-age story and set in Wisconsin. About a 15-year-old boy is trying to solve the murder of his father, who was a local deputy sheriff. What do you remember about being 15? Did you grow up in the 70s? Were you 15 back then? Have you thought about writing a novel? What questions might you have either about writing, about the book, or maybe your experiences with 15-year-olds or being 15 yourself? I hope you'll join in the conversation at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And, you know, Jim, just as we broke for news, we were talking about the importance of the bicycle in the for a 15-year-old back in the 70s, and certainly further ahead. But you had a story you were telling about bicycles.
Right. I was talking about in Neenah, Wisconsin, the local swimming pool, the outdoor swimming pool, was the huge attraction in the summertime. And a very large parking lot out in front was almost entirely made up of bike racks. Kids came from every corner of the city, from down from Menasha also, and they almost all came on their own bicycle. And so it was a parking lot full of bike racks. And you contrast that with today. Now they've renovated the whole swimming pool, but now it's a parking lot for cars. So that's kind of a story that points to the difference of mobility and freedom between the early 1970s, when the book is set, and today.
And, you know, there at that time, not everybody had a cell phone in their back pocket.
Nobody did.
Nobody did.
That's right.
So why did you choose that time for your book?
Larry, the easy answer to that is I grew up in that time. And I have such strong memories of childhood, you know, even all the way back to when I was, you know, a five-year-old kid living in Menasha at that time. But I have such strong memories of growing up in Neenah that I was able to rely on those heavily. And weave elements of my own memories into the fictional story of this fictional character.
You know, you said you wrote five books.
Yeah, I mean...
Before this one.
I never finished them because I wasn't satisfied. I got as far as 40,000 words probably in one, maybe a couple of them made it to 20,000 words, but I was not satisfied. I knew it had to be good or better than what was coming out of me, and so I've still got those in a file on my computer called the Boneyard, and when I started writing 11 Miles to Oshkosh, I put it in Neenah. I relied on memory. I really tried to amp up the voice so you feel like you've really got a 15-year-old kid in your ear when you're reading it. I also included in the voice kind of a talk to the reader aspect.
Yeah.
And I thought that helped. You know, in Huckleberry Finn, the very first few sentences in the book, Huckleberry Finn is talking to the reader. Same thing in Moby Dick, Call Me Ishmael, he's talking to the reader. And there are other works of fiction where the narrator takes a pause and
To Kill a Mockingbird, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I used that aspect. I think it worked out well for me to have Dell kind of use that sort of a voice.
Yeah, how hard was it to get that voice, that 15-year-old voice? I mean, you're not 15 for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm in a writer's group in Hudson, Wisconsin, where I live, and the members of the writer's group kind of think that's a natural voice that I've kind of got a knack for that, and so I decided to use it. I've written so many short stories, and some of them are in the voice of teenagers and others are in the voice of adults. But over the years, I've been writing short stories for 10 years now. Over the years, I've kind of migrated to a lot of first-person narrative and tried to practice this voice of a teenager. And maybe there's more teenager in me than most people, even though I'm way past that.
Well, I always feel like that for me, too.
But yeah, I've practiced it, Larry, and on that subject, the whole business of being part of a writer's group and writing a lot of short stories has been really helpful for me to develop my ability and my voice as a fiction writer.
I can't tell you how many other authors have said exactly the same the same thing to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Seems to be a very important part of the whole process of writing a novel, or writing anything for that matter, short stories or novels?
Yeah. I think that you have to write some stuff that's not good enough on your way to writing something that is good enough. And to do that, it helps to be part of a writer's group or in some way have critique feedback. So in our group, we meet once a month, and if you want to submit something, you do it on email to the rest of the group, and when you show up for the meeting, they've not only got a red-marked copy of what you submitted, but you get some verbal feedback. That is so helpful. And so I continue to do that, participate in this writer's group in Hudson, Wisconsin.
Yeah, they always, many people say, well, writing is such a solitary process. Well, it is in a way. I mean, you're sitting in front of your typewriter or your computer, or maybe you've got a pencil. And I mean, there are some very well-known authors who wrote all their books with a pencil. I was trying to remember who it was that actually would only use a certain type of pencil his entire writing life, and he wrote many, many, many best-selling books. But it's not entirely a solitary process. When
right.
you can come monthly or whatever to
right yeah, if you can get with a critique group. The other thing that I have done, because from a background, I don't really come from an English language background. I come from an engineering career background. But the other thing that I have done is through my membership in the Wisconsin Writers Association and attending conventions. There was just one a week ago down in Milwaukee that I attended. And that gives you some education by attending workshops. But they also offer writing contests in different categories, poetry, nonfiction, memoir, fiction. And by entering contests, I have been able to gain confidence because I've had some success in those contests.
Yeah.
And so there's the skill level to build up, and then there's the confidence level to build up at the same time.
You know, you mentioned that you have an engineering background, and what sprung immediately to my mind was that you, in a way, used a little of that in your book when you were writing about the prank that the boys were going to play. I think it was at maybe the homecoming football game.
Exactly. So Dell and his buddies attend Shattuck High, which is the Neenah High School for 9th and 10th graders. It was at the time. And Menasha is kind of the arch rival right across town. And so they invented something. And Grandpa Asa, again, was a facilitator in those shenanigans. But the boys invented something, installed it under the ground of the Menasha High School football field for the surprise of everyone at the homecoming festivities.
You don't need to tell anymore. Shouldn't tell anymore about what happens because it's pretty darn good. I'm going to switch to another character in the book that I thought was kind of interesting. Appears a little later in the book and for somewhat of a short period of time, but the impact of Wolf, the Native American fisherman, is pretty strong, even though that person is not, probably doesn't have more than three or four sentences in the book.
Right, he doesn't speak much in the book, but he makes an impact on Dell. He's a homeless man. A Native American homeless man, and Dell encounters him fishing behind the library. And at first, Dell's own bias is, I got to get away from this guy. He ends up getting invited by Wolf to fish on the same dock as him. It turns out they're both fishing for a fish most people don't fish for, called moon eyes.
Yeah.
And Dell helps Wolf catch enough fish. Wolf helps Dell with a way of rigging his fishing line. They help each other. And they get to know each other. They get to respect each other. Dell eventually ends up trying to help Wolf in other ways. He finds the kind of hiding spot where Wolf hangs out. He's homeless, and he, you know, brings him a few things to try to help him. And ultimately, a tragic event occurs, and it makes a big involving Wolf, and it makes a big impact on Dell.
And certainly, something that stuck in my mind was the impact that he had. And you know, you really do, or at least I really got to like that kid.
I'm glad to hear that.
Delmar, the main character, by the end, I really wanted to actually, nuts, I hope he writes another book. And we find out what happened to him later on in his life and career, which I always think of, that's a mark of a good book, when you want to know more about the characters and the, you know, especially the principal character and mm-hmm. and what happened later.
It's, yeah. Well, I appreciate that sentiment, Larry. Maybe there could be a book two regarding what's next for Dell.
You do have, you write a really suspenseful chase scene near the end of the book. And the pacing, I thought of that, was really good. How did you get the pacing right in something like that?
I guess one of my main beliefs is that the worst thing you can do is bog things down with aspects that don't matter. So I think it was successful in keeping the tension high by not wasting time between, let's say, sub-events in that one big event, which being the chase scene.
Yeah.
So I have a strong belief in not using wordy sentences, not overdoing it with description, kind of the Hemingway approach of keeping things clean. And I'm glad to hear you say that you like the pace and that the narrative worked for you.
Yeah. And a couple of, I wanted to mention just a couple of other characters in the book, just to give people a kind of an idea. There was a bully, Larry yeah. Buskin, I think his name
Larry
was.
Larry Buskin is the primary bully. He has an arc of growth in his life, too, during this year. Yeah, he is absolutely the enemy of Dell at first. And through a series of events, it reaches a point where Larry Buskin, you can tell he respects Dell suddenly, and he's a little bit afraid of Dell too, because there's a little bit of switch of power. Do you remember that, Larry?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so there's a bully, but he's not just some kind of a run-of-the-mill bully. He's a bully who's no dummy either, but he's in trouble. He's in real trouble at the end. And at the end, Dell is more helping the bully than running from him.
Yeah, and another one that character I wanted to mention was Minnow's English teacher, Mrs.
Borger.
Borger, is that right? Would pronounce her name? Was that your English teacher? Was her name Mrs. Borger?
No. None of the characters are real people. Mrs. Borger is a made-up character, but she's got some pizzazz. I mean, the very beginning of the book, Dell says something like, "I'm pretty sure she hates me," in one of the earlier chapters.
Yeah.
But with time, it's obvious that Mrs. Borger does not hate Dell Fenwick, and she becomes one of his allies. So he has he's kind of a mismatched set of allies that he needs them, because he's going up against the killer of his father. And Mrs. Borger is one of those. And the other thing Mrs. Borger is occasionally he goes to church. Four times in the book he goes to church, and Mrs. Borger is always there waiting for him, kind of becomes his church date, his English teacher and church date.
And it's another important part of the book, for sure. The other thing that I wanted to mention was I was interested in the history that you insert into the book. I may be talking with another character, the girl that he likes, Opal Parsons.
Opal Parsons, yeah.
Yeah. And with her, and then with her parents.
Right, and Dell enjoys, so Opal Parsons is the first African-American student at Shattuck High, and so as such, she's got her own set of challenges that come with that. And then Opal's parents live not far from Dell's house on the island, and so he figures out where they live, gets to know Opal, and at one point gets invited over for supper, And he kind of gets going on, a narrative, a talking spree about the history of Nina and the history of the island. And for some reason, Del Fenwick knows a lot about the Indians and a lot about the first territorial governor, Governor Doty, who had a cabin. It's still there if anybody wants to see it. He realizes that Opal's mom and Opal's father are listening very intently, and he goes on an explanation of some of the history of the region, including Nicolette and the Fox Indians, the Winnebago Indians, and so on.
I like that, and I was sure that the story he was telling, that you were telling through him, was accurate.
Yeah, I know it was accurate as of the time of the early 70s, because these are things that I had learned back then. For example, Del talks about the Fox Indians on Little Lake Butamore, and there's a park called Fritzy Park, and we had, I don't know what grade I was in, but we had an elderly man give us a talk at Fritzy Park where battle, at the time you could call it a massacre, of the Fox Indians took place. And now I notice, however, Larry, that the historical marker has been taken down because there is some dispute about the accuracy of that. But I told it the way that I learned it back then.
And that makes sense to me. You have some appearances. I hope you get out and get around a lot to promote your book. But I know you've got some coming up. And October 10 is the one that I have that's coming up soonest. And that, you ought to get a good crowd for that, because that's at the Nina Public Library.
Yeah, it's part of the Fox Cities Book Festival. I'll be talking at the Nina Library on October 10th at 1:30. Anybody in the area who is interested in learning more about the book or more about having a discussion, more of a conversation on writing and the book 11 Miles to Oshkosh in particular, please come. I do hope we get a good crowd there, and I think we will, because my mom has been telling people all over Nina about it. So,
well, you're going to be in Magers and Quinn Bookstore in Minneapolis on October 30th at 7 p.m.
That's right.
And let's see, you're also, I got you down for November 8th at River Falls Public Library in River Falls.
That's right. So those two are over near where I live. I live in Hudson. And then I'm also working with the Hudson Library on one that we're still working on the details, but it'll be more in the wintertime.
It's one of those books I think could make a great little movie, too.
Well, that'd be interesting. I'm just getting my toe in the water here, Larry. The whole business of doing book talks and so on, this is new to me, and I'm excited about it. I was glad to be invited on your radio show to talk about it, and looking forward to this coming year.
Well, I hope you sell a ton of these books, Jim. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. I look forward to it. Hopefully we'll have a chance to talk again. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Larry.
Jim Guhl, his last name is spelled G-U-H-L, and the book title is 11 Miles to Oshkosh, and it is published right here in the state at the University of Wisconsin Press. Great, and I highly recommend this book. It was really a lot of fun for me to read, and it's a great read. Tomorrow, David Drake and Jamie Nack back to talk about the wonderful world of Wisconsin wildlife. In the meantime, hey, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.